Transportation Policy Committee will come to order, please. We have a quorum. We have two sets of minutes here, I think. Everybody, I assume, has had the opportunity to read these at least two or three times. Representative Dorholt, would you move the adoption of the minutes, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move to minutes of...
Excuse me, I should tell you that they're 29th, January 29th.
Here we go, January 29th minutes.
And 30th.
So I move approval of the January 29th and 30th minutes.
Are there any objections to that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are adopted. We have three bills today for consideration. The first one is House File 146, Howe Trunk Highway 23, designated as Officer Tom Decker Memorial Highway. And first, would you like to introduce this, Representative Howe? And
yes, Chair Earhart. This bill, basically all it does is to memorialize a section of highway that Officer Tom Decker, who was killed in the line of duty in Cold Spring, and memorialize a section of highway of about 11 miles, in honor of him and to memorialize that highway so people passing through it remember the sacrifice that he made on that day. And so what it would be is a couple of signs put on either end of the highway, one at the entrance of Cold Spring and one at the other end at the entrance of Richmond, Minnesota,
Mr.
on Highway 23.
Move the bill.
And you... You're on this committee, so you can move the bill. So.
Actually, I'm on the Finance Committee,
well,
Chair.
Then go sit in the corner. Okay, Representative Runbeck, are you willing to move this bill so we get it before
Thank
the
Mr.
committee?
Chair, I'll
Thank
move
you.
The
there you go.
So
you're moved, and you're on the table, and you've got some witnesses.
We got some testifiers here.
Thank you. And please give your name for the tape.
Okay. My name is Paul Hetland. I am the, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, sorry. My name is Paul Hetland. I am the city administrator for the city of Cold Spring, and I am here on behalf of the mayor of Cold Spring and also city council. And I certainly appreciate the motion made for the bill and also your hearing our testimony today. Certainly, Officer Decker, Tommy as we knew him, was very near and dear to our hearts. To lose a fellow employee, to lose an officer is just something you don't wish in your worst nightmare. So it is the very least that we want to see we feel we can do is dedicate a section of that road to be able to memorialize his name and be that testimony for all officers traveling that stretch of highway. So again, on behalf of Cold Spring, and I should say one more thing, if I may, Mr. Chair, thank you to all of you and to so many citizens, all of the citizens of Minnesota, for all of the incredible support throughout this amazing process. So. Your heartfelt tears and your donations and all of the other hugs that you've given us have been greatly appreciated. So, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Committee, I am Phil Dones, and I am the Chief of Police for the City of Cold Spring, and I have held that title for 20 years. I could not be more in favor of this bill. I believe that it's an inexpensive, being a fiscal conservative, I believe it's an inexpensive way to memorialize an officer who gave his life to his community, and it covers only the jurisdiction in which he patrolled from one end to the other. So we're not asking for the signs to be placed at the edge of the state of Minnesota. It's roughly 11 miles. It's the area that this officer patrolled for 6 years. I also would like to thank the state, if I may, Mr. Chair, the BCA, Department of Public Safety. Everyone has done their job, and they've done it in an exemplary manner. They have stepped up to the plate and given us all the assistance we need to see this through. As you probably already know, we still have an unsolved murder on this case. But I think this bill makes total sense, and it's inexpensive. It's also a reminder to my officers to, and any officer that passes by, that safety is paramount. We don't like losing officers. The nation lost 127 this year, and that's a record low. So, I also brought along a picture of Officer Tommy Decker. We hear the name so often, but rarely do we put a face to it. And when you put a face to it, it makes it a lot more real. So,
thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Mr. Chairman, honorable members, my name is Martin Bodie. I'm the administrator for the City of Richmond. You'll be pleased to know I do not have a prepared statement for you, and I'll be brief. Quite simply, I'm here to represent the city and my mayor and council in expressing our appreciation for your consideration of this bill that Representative Howe has so generously authorized. The City of Richmond and the City of Cold Spring work very hard to have a partnership together in many different ventures, and one is a joint powers agreement for police protection. I thank you for your time, and I appreciate your time as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody here that would like to... No one described exactly what is going on, and you still have an investigation going on, but is there anyone here that is not aware of the situation with Tom Decker, or that would like to hear the actual...
Mr. Chair, if there is, if you desire, I can give you a brief rundown.
Well, very brief, but I think it would be...
I can be very brief. Mr. Chair, Committee, on the night of November 29th, 2012, Officer Decker and another officer responded to a common welfare check, possibly suicidal mail. Officer Decker exited his squad car and was immediately shot in the head and was dead on scene. Other than that, I can't disclose any details of the investigation because it is ongoing.
Okay. That's fine. I just thought...
Yep. I appreciate that.
Okay. Are there any questions or other testimony? Where is he? Oh, Representative Doyle.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Powell, just wanted to thank you. As somebody knew Tommy through his family, and this is the least we can do, and Chief, you guys have done a wonderful job. It's a tough one. I just want to thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Mr. Chair,
Representative Runbeck.
I would just like to clarify that my motion was to move the bill and send it to the General Register.
I'm going to lay this over for possible inclusion at this juncture. We might bring it back and send it to the General Register a little later, but for now, I'm going to lay it over for possible inclusion, and we'll have to bring it back, and if we decide it runs alone, then we will do that. I want to see what's going to generate so far from the rest of the policy bills here. It may be that we will send it directly, but for now I'm going to hold it back. Any other thing? Thank you all for coming down here, and thank you for presenting the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee.
Representative Nornes, House File 138. Representative Rosenthal, would you like to move this bill so we can get him on board here?
I'd like to move House File 138.
Thank you. So moved. Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good to see you in the chair. Been a while.
Yes.
I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the subject of mini trucks.
Okay.
There are a few members of the committee that have been here long enough to have heard about this before, but most of the, as I look around the room, there are quite a few new members, and so hopefully I can convince you that this is a good idea. I handed out, if you've noticed, three pieces of paper. I think they were handed out. Well, they're being handed out right now, I guess. But we'll wait just a moment. After they're handed out, I have just something to point out. But the legislation that we have before us basically allows a mini truck, and there's a picture of one coming around, so you'll see what we're talking about, allows them to be registered as any other motor vehicle in Minnesota. Right now, they're kind of a special class, and they're only allowed if a county issues a permit. Back in 2009, that was kind of a compromise that we came up with, and the problem is most counties aren't interested in doing that. And it isn't that they're opposed to it, it's just a lot of work for maybe one or two. In fact, they may have no person living in their county that owns one of these things. So it's just very few counties that have taken the effort to do that. I actually had asked the county association, to draft some kind of an ordinance that all counties could see and very simply pass, and that hasn't been done. So, again, the counties are basically just uninterested. So what we're hoping to do with this bill is to make these vehicles treat them like any other motor vehicle. They would have to be titled, licensed, insured, all the rest of it. Now the counties, if they choose, can opt out. So if the county is really upset with these little trucks, they could decide to say no, you can't use them. There is a restriction in the bill. These vehicles can only be driven on county and township roads and not on trunk highways or on the interstate. They have a top speed of about 62 miles an hour. They're four-wheel drive and a very economical little vehicle, which come in different shapes and sizes, from vans to pickups to four-door club cabs. Again, you name it, and they're probably available. The handouts, are they out all the way around? Okay. All right. There's three different pieces that I handed out there. The first one would be a Model T. You see that? And the second one is a Crosley. And many of you probably have never heard of the Crosley, but that was a popular car in the early 50s. That was an economy car. It was developed by the fellow that made his fortune in the radio business. If you've ever had Crosley Radio, that's where he got the money to developed this car, and it came in different models. And then the third sheet shows you what a mini truck looks like. And the only reason for giving you that example is that two out of the three are actually allowed on our roads today. It's the Model T and the Crosley. They can be licensed and driven in Minnesota. Now, you wouldn't take a Model T down the interstate, and there are places you wouldn't go with it, but they are allowed to be driven. The mini truck is not. And so I just point that out for whatever it's worth to you. I think it points out that one has seat belts, one has headlights, one has heaters, one has air conditioning, one has four-wheel drive, one's very economical to drive, and on and on, where the other two have none of those things. So I guess I'm asking the committee to fully consider this time allowing those that choose to drive this vehicle the opportunity to run up and down the county roads and the township roads. Now, those that are using these would be farmers, resort operators, small businesses, anyone that wants a utility vehicle that can haul a load and also save a little money on gas. If you want to plow snow with it, that's available. If you want to put tracks on it, it's available. And I don't know what more I could add, except that I'm not a dealer. I have no interest. I don't own one, but I have a neighbor that does. And he's tired of being arrested. So that's kind of my case right there, Mr. Chair. And I'm open to questions.
Are there any questions for Representative Norness? Representative Beard.
Chair, Representative Norness, I remember this from the last couple of years, too, and we've had specific permission. It's actually two questions, Mr. Chair. In the counties, Representative Norness, that have used them so far, has there been any catastrophe, the wings fallen off of anything, or have people used them to great advantage and done so safely so far?
I've not heard of any negative incidents, accidents, injuries. I'm not aware of that many counties, frankly, that are allowing these vehicles. I believe the city of Winona, or down in that area, maybe the county, has had some experience with them, and it's all been positive.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beard.
Thank you. Representative Norness, any other state in the union that permits these for being used basically on farm-to-market roads? Do you know of any place else that's been used?
I didn't bring a list along. I know there are some. I think North Dakota, for one, does. Mm. And again, I've not heard of any problems that it's created. Again, I should point out, I think I mentioned it before, they go 62 miles an hour, which is slow by some standards, but that is the speed limit on most of our township and county roads. So they're not going to be a hazard because they're going too slow. And in fact, one of my just personal pet peeves is that people want to go 65 in a 60 mile an hour zone, and I'm going 60. So it actually may slow traffic down a little bit if there's a lot of these on the road. So,
Representative Norness, I see that they can either be powered by an electric motor or gasoline here. You know what the split is on that?
I think at this point, any that I've seen have all been gas powered.
Okay.
And the example that I showed you in that handout, I think it's just under 1,000 cc, okay. 970, I think. I think that's the size. That's probably the biggest engine that's available. There are motorcycles probably that have bigger motors than that.
Well, the bill, I think, calls for 660 cc's, but whatever, not more than?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Norness, thanks for bringing the bill. I think in the past, the Department of Public Safety has expressed concerns about the fact that these vehicles didn't have a VIN number. Is that... changed on that?
The bill does require that they do have a VIN number.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, I think it refers on page 2 to 1200 cc's or less.
Oh. Could be.
There are some older models of these that may have some problems with VIN numbers. I'm not certain, but if there's a problem with VIN numbers and it getting licensed, I'd say that would be an issue that would have to be taken care of by the Department of Public Safety.
Oh, under current law. I guess I was reading under current law.
That was amended, I think, at some point along the way.
Any other questions? Anybody wants to testify in favor of this? Oh, we have, excuse me? That's Representative Mazin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Powell, I have one question. When I'm looking at the overview here, it does say that it was not originally manufactured to meet federal safety standards for passenger vehicles. Is that still the case?
Representative Nernes.
These are all imported vehicles. Imported? I think that the issue in the past has been that it may have not, maybe hasn't had an official crash test. I think that's what they're referring to. And I don't know for a fact if that's even happened, if the manufacturers now have been doing that. Against the original mini trucks that came over here were used vehicles, mostly from Japan. And so they came here as a used vehicle, and I don't know if we crash test used vehicles, but now the one I gave you in that handout is actually a new vehicle manufactured, and it has, I think, more of the standard features that we expect. The steering wheel's on the correct side, for example. But as far as the crash test, I can't tell you whether that has happened or how it fared, for that matter.
Okay. So, thank you.
Representative Norris, the one with the slick new, what's the model there, double R something? LIL pickup? That's a new vehicle, manufactured.
That represents a new vehicle, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that foreign-born, or is it?
That happens to be a Chinese truck.
Okay.
But the Koreans make them, the Japanese make them, and I'm not sure who else. For some reason, this country doesn't.
Representative, are they imported and sold here?
Yes.
Under the same...
I can't... There was some talk about that truck being finally assembled in this country.
Ah.
I'm not sure where that's at, but there was talk about that happening. There has to be a market first,
yeah.
And I guess that's what we're kind of talking about here. There's... Right now, you buy it, you got to drive it in your yard or in the ditch. And I don't think we want it in the ditch or chewing up the yard. So.
Well, I thought I saw pictures of a lot of these somewhere. There was a page with little pictures all over it. And a lot of them looked like they were kind of homemade, put together pieces from other...
This is not a homemade truck.
Not this one.
No.
They're all existing... manufactured and assembled by the auto manufacturers, not in somebody's backyard, or
no, these are made by. They're available in other countries. They're quite popular in other countries. They just haven't. They've had trouble.
Okay.
Getting to Minnesota. The model that I showed you. There's only two models available. You get the basic model, or you get the deluxe model, and that comes with leather seats. So.
Where can I get one of those Model Ts? I think I'd like one of those.
My neighbor has four of those, Mr. Chair. Or five.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Sundin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Sundin would like to ask the testifier. If, in fact, this passes, are we creating a market for these vehicles here? And if so, are we replacing any American-made goods with imported goods here?
Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I guess the answer would be yes, we are creating a market for these. What that market would be, how many people would care to buy one, I don't know. And there is no American-made vehicle that's comparable to this, so there's nothing that it really competes with. other than I don't believe you can find an American-made pickup that's small these days. Even the small ones have gotten to be bigger, and so there isn't any class really that's similar to this vehicle. So it opens up an opportunity, but I don't see that it would be negative for other existing dealers. I can see dealerships wanting to add these at some point. I'd hope to have one out here parked on the street, but that wasn't possible. But if you see one, it isn't for everybody. But for somebody, again, that has a small business, and I know resorters right now have them up in northern Minnesota, some do, and they're handy to run around with, but you have to be careful where you're going.
Anybody else with questions? I think there's some testifiers here in the audience that would like to speak to this. Patricia McCormick. Well, who's first? I got the county here. Mm-hmm. Would you? Is this for or against?
Go ahead.
My name is Debbie Rydak with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I'm here with Wayne Sandberg, county engineer from Washington, and legislative committee for the Minnesota County Engineers Association. And we have some concerns with this bill. I'm going to hand it over to Wayne, but I'm here for any questions afterward about our position.
Thank you, Abby, and thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for the opportunity to speak today. Again, my name is Wayne Sandberg. I'm a civil engineer. I'm also the Washington County Highway Engineer. And I am here representing Minnesota County Engineers Association and the Association of Minnesota Counties, and I am testifying in opposition to this bill. Mini trucks were not designed to meet North American traffic and vehicle safety standards or to be operated on American roadways. Now, these vehicles are imported into this country as off-road vehicles, and as a result, they're not required to comply with U.S. vehicle air pollution emission standards, nor are they required to meet U.S. vehicle safety design standards. Back in 2010, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, and those are the guys that crash cars, you see them on TV, they release the rankings every year. They created a two-minute YouTube video discussing the safety concerns associated with mini trucks and other low-speed vehicles. I would ask the chair if I can show that video today. It is less than 2 minutes, about 1 minute, 45 seconds. In it, you are going to see a crash test of a mini truck with a Ford Ranger. Now, as you watch this video, and especially the crash, I ask you to take notice of two things. First, the crash you are going to see shows the mini truck traveling at 25 miles per hour and the Ford Ranger traveling at 35 miles per hour. So this is a low-speed crash. Second, notice how small the mini truck looks compared to a Ford Ranger, which is already a small vehicle. These mini trucks are small and bare bones. In fact, even though these vehicles are called mini trucks, they have more in common with souped-up golf carts than they have with trucks. So, Mr. Chair, may I show the video?
Sure. We need the lights? No, that's okay.
Nordic is sold in the United States. Passenger vehicles must meet basic safety standards that include airbags and other crash protection features intended to protect people in serious crashes. But increasingly, states are allowing vehicles that aren't required to meet these standards travel on regular roads with regular traffic. Some of the vehicles which aren't required to meet all the crash protection standards are low-speed vehicles, like the electric-powered GEM E2. Others are mini trucks, which were originally designed for use in other countries and are imported into the United States as off-road vehicles for an inexpensive way to haul things around on the farm. These vehicles are intended for use in areas of limited traffic, not for use on public roads. Our crash test between the mini truck and the Ford Ranger pickup demonstrates the difference in crash protection offered by these two vehicle designs. With no front airbags or front crumple zone, a real driver in the mini truck would have suffered serious head, neck, and leg injuries. In contrast, a driver in the Ford Ranger would have walked away. The GEM E2 runs on batteries, and it was designed to meet the federal low-speed vehicle safety requirements. So it has headlights, and a windshield, and safety belts. But that's about it. It doesn't have front crush zones or front serious crashes. Saving fuel and reducing pollution are important public goals, but we shouldn't sacrifice 40 years of vehicle safety progress to meet them. We can help the environment without putting lives at risk.
Now, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, in addition to the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA, we call it, which is the agency within the United States Department of Transportation that is responsible for improving safety in our nation's highways, issued a letter in 2009 that states in part, in the past, NHTSA has issued interpretations of the statutory term motor vehicle, concluding that a number of mini trucks are not motor vehicles and therefore need not comply with any of the federal safety standards. Because these vehicles are not manufactured to meet U.S. safety standards, NHTSA cannot endorse their use on public highways. Now, current Minnesota law allows mini trucks to be utilized on public streets via local ordinance under a permit. This represents a good public policy compromise because it recognizes the inherent safety deficiencies of these vehicles, but does allow local jurisdictions to permit them on a presumably limited, low-volume public street-type basis to meet a local issue. This current proposed bill turns this completely on its head by making these unsafe vehicles legal everywhere and then asking local officials to scramble to have to create ordinances banning their use all across the state. In conclusion, Minnesota has developed a national reputation for having some of the safest roadways in the United States. The safety record is the result of good roadway engineering, improved vehicle safety, and good public policy. This bill represents a departure from that trend by legalizing inherently unsafe vehicles on our local streets and county highways and placing the burden on local officials to figure out how to clean up the mess afterwards. I ask you to join me in opposing this bill, and thank you. I'll stand for any questions.
Are there any questions for the witness? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chair, and presenters as well. You know, I've seen a lot of other demonstrations in regards to car accidents with motorcycles, et cetera, as well, which is probably even more dangerous. How does the Insurance Institute and so forth recommend insuring them and not this, that at least gives at least some additional protection?
Mr. Sandberg?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, motorcycles are a different safety classification, and I can't speak to how the Insurance Institute would reflect on those. What I can suggest to you is this. Legalizing mini trucks, the primary audience of these is going to be younger drivers. And we also know younger drivers already are at risk drivers. They have a higher risk potential. And when you legalize a vehicle like this that, for all intents and purposes, looks like a safe vehicle but really is not, I think it sends the wrong message to parents and other folks on the road that these are, in fact, because they'd be legal, they would be safe. And that's something that we don't want to do. We want to reverse that trend. You're not seeing, with motorcycles, I think people know what they're in for. With these vehicles, I think there's some deception there of what you're really buying, what you're in for.
Actually, I think these are legal, but not in the sense that they're trying to be on the road here. Aren't they legal now?
Mr. Chair, they are imported from Asia typically as off-road vehicles. So yeah. Where they are allowed is on campuses, like some you'll see college campuses use them, resorts, farms, and they can drive in the ditch as kind of an off-road vehicle in that way.
Okay. Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a quick question for either one of the presenters. Does this violate any federal, would we be trying to violate or go against any federal safety standards? Do we even have the right to do that? Was House research, I don't want to go ahead and pass something that that the feds say that we can't do if there are federal safety standards. I just need some clarification on that.
Well, isn't the question whether we can even do these on the roads now, and that's what the request is? They're not allowed, I think, on roads now, but as off-road
vehicles. Mr. Chair, if the county issues a permit, you can use them on county roads in the county, not just in the cities.
But not on trunk highways.
I guess I take issue with the fact that they're a glorified golf cart, because you can see in the picture they're not. There are some differences of opinions here. And as far as the safety aspect goes, You know, there is some risk every time you get into your SUV or your truck. There was an accident, a fatality just, I believe, today, where a truck tipped over and the load landed on a car. I don't care what kind of a car you got, sometimes it's just not a good day. So there is some responsibility that the driver, the owner, takes when they choose the vehicle they're going to drive or own. I have a 93 Pontiac convertible, for example. Doesn't have airbags. They weren't available. I drive it anyway.
You wear a helmet?
No, but on a windy day, I worry about the roof because it's not going to hold up many trees. But there's some risk every time I drive it, but I choose to do that anyway. So.
Are there other questions? Representative Mazin.
Mr. Chair, whoever would like to answer. So what I'm hearing is right now, these are only allowed on the roads if the local governments allow.
That is correct.
And what you're trying to do is make it in reverse, where they would have to ban it. And the other here's my question, though. Normally, if you go to buy a car, and I don't know where you buy these mini trucks, I'm thinking most of us assume that there are certain standards that the vehicle that is for sale has already passed. And if I'm understanding the testimony here, these vehicles have not passed the normal standards or normal expectations. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, that is correct. These vehicles are exempt from having to meet any federal vehicle safety standards, because when they're imported into the United States, they're imported as off-road vehicles. And so NHTSA has ruled them that they do not meet the classification of a motor vehicle, and therefore they're not required to meet any standards.
Mr. Chair, I would respond by saying that
Mr. Norris,
the buyer and the seller need to have that discussion. So if you're purchasing one, that would be part of the discussion, I think, that if you're interested in safety, they would have to tell you, you know, whether or not it has passed and where it's at. So I think a lot of it's the responsibility, again, of the consumer to make that decision.
Thank you.
I see Pat McCormick up there. Did you want to testify? You're on the list, anyway. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services, and I'm giving testimony on behalf of our Department of Public Safety, not just our division, because of the fact that our department also represents the Office of Traffic Safety and State Patrol, but those divisions didn't have representatives available today. I would support the testimony from the county's association in terms of the fact that our concern is the safety of the vehicles. They don't meet federal safety standards. I verified that again with our American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, who checked with NHTSA to make sure there hadn't been any changes in their ratings of these mini trucks. Our concern is that this would be upgrading those vehicles to a passenger class vehicle, and we don't believe that if the vehicle does not meet the safety standards, that we should be able to utilize them on our highways. And when the bill passed in 2009, we believed that we had come up with a compromise that would at least allow their use on local roads. And so we supported that position with the use of the mini trucks in that respect, but we don't believe that it should be classified as a passenger vehicle as this legislation does. the mini trucks could have a VIN number, but it might not be the 17-digit VIN number that we use for title and registration. My experience in talking to other administrators is that oftentimes they have a 19-digit VIN number, but it isn't the VIN number that would usually be, which is part of our requirements in terms of titling and registering a vehicle. And so we support the current process that so that these vehicles are available for off-road use or crossing roads or using it on farms, but we just do not support this legislation that would create a passenger vehicle.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. McCormick? Thank you. And others?
Mr. Chair, I apologize for taking, I didn't know we'd take this much time, but hopefully the committee is fine.
I think we still have time.
Good.
Oh, sorry.
I'm looking for somebody that supports this bill.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Ann Finn, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. I'll be very brief. I want to first of all say that in House File 138, we do support efforts to better define these vehicles, and we noted that there are some nice provisions in there as it pertains to public safety and safety features. Right now, though, as you've heard, people can use these vehicles on private property and as allowed by municipalities, but the bill actually changes that to expand it, and we believe that it infringes on local control. You'll see on lines 3.29 to 3.31 that the bill says that a mini truck may be operated on public streets and highways as provided in this section when it is equipped with the following equipment. And then further on lines 4.22 to 4.24, it says that a local road authority may by ordinance prohibit the operation of a mini truck on streets and highways under the local road authority's jurisdiction. And that's really the hang up for us, is that this legislation would presume that the vehicles are allowed unless the city council proactively prohibits them, and that would be a change from current law that we do not like at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dave Peacha, the Executive Director for the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, and on behalf of our association, we are here to testify in opposition to this bill. Much of our information has already been presented, but our major concern was about the occupant safety. And as you can see demonstrated in the film, that the design and construction of the passenger compartment of mini trucks does not meet the federal motor vehicle safety standards, and that is a major concern for us. The vehicle design and technology are an important component of the law enforcement towards zero death initiative that's sponsored by the Department of Public Safety. This bill is in direct conflict with that initiative. I also support the League of Minnesota Cities position, and our association does, in that we would request that if this bill were to move forward, that the cities be able to opt in rather than opt out. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else that would like to testify? Representative Ronbeck.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dornis. I'm hearing that we should be concerned because it doesn't meet the federal safety standards, but if there is consumer demand, and if we can measure that, and if there are dealers wanting to carry this vehicle, and it's a convenient and sort of attractive new angle, I guess, of passenger vehicle, I mean, it seems like we ought to be receptive to that. Do we know what the public demand is, what the consumers are doing out there? How many are buying them?
Representative Norris?
Mr. Chair and Representative, essentially there's no market. I mean, you really wouldn't buy one and spend $12,000 if you can't go anywhere. Then you'd just buy a ATV or you'd buy a snowmobile or something else. They also have some risk involved. There are more ATV accidents and fatalities than I mean, there are no accidents with a mini truck that I'm aware of, but there are a lot from ATVs tipping over and hitting trees and snowmobiles and other vehicles. And the emphasis right now is on bicycles. We want more and more bicycles on the road. And then you could add motorcycles. No. So there's a safety factor in all of these things. And I think this safety issue is being kind of overblown when it comes to this vehicle. I'm as interested in safety as anyone. But there is no way to be 100% safe. I remember a Cadillac tipping over on the interstate right outside of Fergus Falls. Fatal accident. You know, so it's safety, I know, is important. But here again, it's up, in my opinion, up to the consumer to make the decision. Some people fly airplanes. You know, they crash once in a while. You can't make them safe. Some put air parachutes on them. That helps. So, I mean, I understand where the opposition is coming from. But again, I guess I also feel for those that either have them or would like to own them. And for us to say, no, you can't, I guess I have trouble with that. So.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Sundin would like to know.
Excuse me. Why don't you have an E on the end of your name?
We'll work on that. Sorry, Mr. Chair. Talk to my father. But in the last couple of weeks, this committee has heard about the fatality rates on the trunk highways and two-lane highways. And I was just asking any of the testifiers if they could somehow stretch your imagination to let us know how this vehicle would make anything safer on those roads, or if in fact we're actually presenting another hazard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sundin, from our information from our members, they are worried about these vehicles being used on trunk highways because of the speed limit, the speeds involved, and the occupational or the occupant protection and design of the occupants or the passengers area. So there is a concern about whether, although they can go 62 miles an hour based on their design, in the event that they were involved in an accident, as was demonstrated by the film, that they feel it would be detrimental to the safety on specifically the trunk highways.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I just want to respond also that where I live, they have horses and buggies on our highways as well, and they share the road with cars. And there may have been an accident, but there aren't many. So they don't have any safety advice.
Well, we have that in southeast Minnesota, too, with the triangles on the back.
Can I ask a question, Mr. Chair? The intent here today is to vote on the bill, laid over, or what is? I forget what the motion was.
Motion actually was that we talk about this, and now I'm going to make a decision if everybody is done testifying, or are there any other questions? Representative Runbeck, you're back.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, it seems to me, Representative Nordis, that this is it's a good idea. I mean, and there may be more interest in it in rural counties outside of the 7-county metro area, you know, where you've got, low vehicle traffic and so on. I mean, would there be any interest in restricting it to non-metro counties and going at it that way?
Representative Nordis?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'd be very open to that, because that is a good point. With the traffic and the highway system in the Twin Cities, I can see where that might be a problem. So I'd be, if the Chair is agreeable to lay this over, if that's what your intention is, I'd be happy to work on that change if that makes somebody a little more comfortable.
Are there any other questions or comments that the committee would like to make? Anyone else in the audience that would like to testify one way or another? If not, I'm going to lay the bill over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oops. Here we go. Next bill is House File 152, Representative Nelson.
I have a hand, a couple of handouts here.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be back in transportation.
Mm-hmm. Want to identify yourself and go ahead.
I'm Representative Nelson, and I have House File 152.
We need to move it. Mr. Chair, we need to move it. Yes, thank you.
Oh, you're not on this committee.
I'm not on this committee either, no.
That's right. Okay. Sundin, Representative Sundin, would you move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move House File number 152.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what House File 152 is putting in statute the ombudsman, and I'll probably mess that up about a dozen times, but into statute that MnDOT has created. Back a few years ago, Commissioner Sorrell created this position to deal with issues between the public and MnDOT when they were and help solve problems and mitigate problems that would come forward. Also, it's been a great help to our staff getting question answers, working with this when we have constituents that come forward to us and with issues of problems with MnDOT, and this is what prompted me to put the bill in. Currently, the new commissioner, Commissioner Zelli, has stated that he intends on keeping this program going forward, but I think it's a good program, and that I want to make sure that it goes forward and that some other commissioner in the future doesn't get rid of it because to try and save budget costs someplace else. Currently, they have this position going. I passed out some information about other parts of statute where we have ombudsman in statute, and I also passed out a little brochure from the Department of Transportation that talks about the things that the ombudsman does and that's what they're doing going forward. And that's basically the nature of the bill. There currently is an ombudsman that's there, and to give you an example of some of the things that they happen or that they deal with, I've got three examples here that from other legislators from the past. We had a situation in Deer River where a MnDOT did work on a road, and there was the constituent that lived up there had the constituent of Representative Purcell's. When they got done with the road, it created a puddle where she had to walk through every day to get her mail. And she got a hold of the ombudsman. They met with the DOT, and they worked out the issue so that they moved by moving her mailbox and working with the post office, were able to get the situation solved so she didn't have to have wet feet every day when she went to get her mail. We also had a situation down in Albert Lea where Representative Brown at the time dispute in the city council between a couple of citizens down there. They found this one lady came forward and said there was a sign that was on MnDOT right away. The sign had been there for 40 years. And it was on MnDOT property, and there was no dispute in that. But MnDOT came forward and arbitrarily told the owner that you have to take it down, you have to take it down right away. And that was kind of harsh. And through the ombudsman, they got 6 more months reprieve on it, and before the fine was finally made to come down. And so that that solved the problem, but it took care of the problem for the individual. And probably the worst one I got here, the situation which really helped this homeowner, an individual homeowner down in, at the time, Carla Bingham's district, Representative Bingham's district, when doing construction on Highway 61, there was damage done to this person's home. And the insurance company for the construction company claimed that it wasn't their fault, that it wasn't part of the road construction. Well, working through the ombudsman down there, they came forward, and there was a lot of work, a lot of damage to this home. There was actual walls moved and cracked, basement foundation cracked, and they got, with the help of the ombudsman, got the insurance company to pay up and take care of the problem on this person's home. So these are the kind of just three examples of things that help. I mean, like I said, also our constituent services, our staff, when we get calls of constituents having issues, they go and talk to the ombudsman, and we get these help get these problems solved. So that's what the bill does. Hope you can support the bill, and I stand for any questions.
Any questions or comments for Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Chairman, and Representative Nelson. Quick question for you, because I'm kind of new to this, so yeah. I'm trying to make sure I understand everything. I think you said that before that there are ombudsmen in other programs. Are they all statutory created, or would this be the first one? And again, can you clarify for me why it needs to be statutory rather than allowing it stand the way it is?
Representative Nelson.
Chair, Mr. Petersburg? And good to meet you. We haven't met yet. So there are other places in the statute where there are ombudsmen. I passed this out that where there are in statute different ombudsmen that are in statute. There are other departments that have them as a course of business. And like I said, my reason for bringing this forward was we were switching commissioners, and this was a concern that this program would go away. I've been assured that Commissioner Zelli is going to support this program and sees the value in it, but I guess my concern is more down the road, future commissioners that would look at this as a way to cut costs at MnDOT, and then we're back in the boat we had before where we had issues with constituents and that having to fight the huge bureaucracy at MnDOT, that this is a way that gives them a face that they can go talk to and help them negotiate and solve their issues without going to litigation.
Any other questions or comments? If not, is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify in favor of or against this bill? We're going to do a different motion here, and I'm going to ask Representative Mason to make this motion. Move that House File 152 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
So moved.
Thank you. Any questions or concerns about the motion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion is adopted, and we move your bill to your own committee.
Thank you, Representative Earhart and our Chair Earhart, and it's been a pleasure being back in transportation for at least a day. Good. I miss it.
We miss you, Representative.
We have one announcement, I think, and that reminder that tomorrow's hearing will be a joint hearing with the Transportation Finance Committee at their usual time.
10 a.m., Mr. Chairman.
10 a.m. Okay. Time to adjourn.